from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
You can't win the Kentucky Derby riding a jackass.
Yes.
You just can't. You have to have a thoroughbred. Now, can you make the most of that thoroughbred if you're really good at it? Sure. Absolutely. But you have to have players. You just have to. And it's been proven time and time again when you've seen really high-level coaches in terms of winning percentages and playoff appearances and runs, and they go to a new team and they don't quite have that same talent base, and they're not the same. Rick Adelman's a great example. Phenomenal with Portland. Phenomenal with Sacramento. Probably should have taken that Kings team to a final if Vlade Divac doesn't tip a rebound right to Robert Horry in game 4.
Yeah.
He doesn't tip it there. It's 3-1 Kings, and they go to the finals and more than likely win a title. Changes that city's complexion in terms of the NBA forever. But it didn't, and that's the way it goes. He moves on to Houston. They were good. They weren't great. And then it just was like not working. And he wasn't good at Golden State when they didn't have players. So it's not like Rick Adelman's a bad basketball coach. He didn't have the guys that fit. So you rely on these Olympic coaches to pick guys that can fit in their system and fit what they do. And if they can't fit, I mean, Jaren's a good example. Jaren doesn't really fit what Steve Kerr likes to run. He was trying to teach him how to do different things. That's a lot to learn in a short amount of time. And like you said, kind of became the scapegoat. Wasn't the player they thought he would be when they saw how he was playing for the Grizzlies. It's a different system. And for these guys, their bread is buttered with what they do on a day-to-day basis for their team, for their coach, for their group. And then you get them in there and you go, okay, you know, we're going to try you doing this. I mean, I was watching it last night with my son because he had never seen Blue Chips.
Oh, and that's a film.
He was fascinated by they're Shaq. Oh, hey, who's the tall white guy? I said, that was a guy named Matt Nover from Indiana. One of my buddies at UC Riverside tried out to be one of the extras. I was like, he didn't make it. That's the guy that beat him, but we knew him too. And, you know, you see all these old college players, Rex Walters and Calvert Chaney. And then you see Penny's in there. And I go, dude, that's Penny Hardaway. He goes, that's Penny Hardaway? I said, that's a young Penny Hardaway. And remember the scene after like week one where Nick Nolte's just riding him and he goes, Coach, I'm homesick. This isn't for me. I need the 1-4 offense where I'm facilitating, scoring, and finding guys. You play this high pick and roll 2-man game. I don't fit in that. That's not what I do. I'm not going to be my best player. And then, of course, his mom, Alfreda Woodard, took the deal, and he goes, you better be at practice on Monday.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, if you want to keep the house in the car, you might want to show up and really work hard. So it does. It's kind of a goofy analogy, but players go places and don't find their ultimate success. Yet you see a change of scenery, and all of a sudden a player that was a 15-point-per-game guy blossoms into 23, 24. Jalen Brunson, he was good in Dallas. He was backing up Doncic, but he was good. Got to where he plays for Tom Thibodeau, realizing that system fits him, and now he's considered one of the top 15 players in the NBA. And was he a top 15 player just not getting minutes in Dallas? I wouldn't go that far, but he got in the right system, it fit his game, and he maximized his abilities that way. And I think a lot of times players get caught in that, where they'll take a bag of money to sign somewhere, and then they go, and it's not what they thought. Amari Stoudemire great example aside from injuries. The New York system wasn't the best for him. Whereas in Phoenix, he was getting maximized having Steve Nash around him. He became a star. Pau Gasol became a Hall of Famer playing next to Kobe, being able to be the sidekick guy, the secondary guy, rather than the lead guy in Memphis where everybody was throwing double and triple teams at him. And everybody in Memphis was getting frustrated because he wasn't that type of guy. But he was still an awesome player.
Eric, we appreciate it.
Guys, have a great weekend.
That is Eric Hasztein, Memphis Grizzlies Radio Network play-by-play announcer. We are underway in the second half. We'll tell you how Team USA is doing as they take on Serbia in the semifinal game. We'll discuss that and more when we come back right here on Jeffrey Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
From the mind of a two-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
In life, some days are good and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work, both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey, and then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Get your head in the financial game with smart investing and budgeting tips straight from the nerds. NerdWallet's experts will set future you up for success with dependable, fact-based insights. No financial misinformation allowed. Learn how to save on your summer vacation, find your next credit card or loan for a big purchase, and invest in your next index fund. Make smarter decisions in 2024. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Jeffrey and company make a list of the biggest stories, both good and bad, that we need to talk about. This is The List.
You just made the list!
Presented by Birdies 901, Memphis's place for virtual golf. The List on 92.9.
Team USA.
You just made the list!
All right, Phil, we've got 6-11 remaining in the third quarter. The U.S. trails Serbia 62-53. If I would have told you that Steph Curry is going to be 7 of 10 from 3 and 8 of 12 from the field, he has 24 points in 20 minutes on the floor, would you have thought that the U.S. was basically trailing the whole game by double digits?
I would say they'd be up by 9.
I think so, too. Of course, the other big story, it's what Phil has been pointing out, what we've been talking about. In the first half, Jokic played 18 and a half minutes. He's yet to come off the floor in the second half. I hope everybody's sitting down for this. The U.S.'s best run came in that minute 30 to close the half when he was on the bench. And I did love it. LeBron he leaves the floor. LeBron immediately backs down whoever the poor defender had to be and just bullied him to the basket, and then he hit him with a too small. To which I'm sitting there going, we ain't doing that when Jokic is on the floor. LeBron's also got, like, I guess he has a cut on his eye or something. We got a Band-Aid move going on the right eyebrow. Listen, I'm not saying it's done, because I would like to point out, despite being down 9 with 5.5 to go, the live line is still U.S. minus 3.5.
Mm.
Ooh, now it just went to U.S. minus 1.5. It's almost a toss-up. U.S. is still favored minus 126 to minus 104, but it's basically now officially a coin flip.
They must think Jokic is coming off the floor again.
Well, I think the thought is too much firepower. In fairness, the live line on this game could probably be impossible to determine, because so much of it is going to be your algorithm shows that one roster is so superior to the other, and it's basically just running a bunch of simulations of what does this look like, and eventually it's just like the talent gets them. But as of right now, as Serbia just hits another three, they go up 65-53. Jokic, so far, he's played 24-40 of, I believe, like an available 26 minutes in 10 seconds. He has 11 points. He has a plus minus of 7. He has 9 assists to go with 3 rebounds. But it's just so obvious on offense that when he's not on the floor, the U.S. can just get whatever they want at the rim. And when he's on the floor, they are scared to death to go in. But you would think the way that the U.S. is shooting that this would be better. But, I mean, this is officially, like, nervy. Like, I was trying to look for total. So the U.S. is shooting 51% from the floor, including 52% from three. Thank you, Steph. Serbia's at 48% from three, 50% from the floor. So basically, wow. I mean, that's the other thing. It's like they're metrically even. And then I'm trying to see what the number is that would show. Turnovers are rough. The U.S. has 8 turnovers to 3.
Okay.
But, I mean, overall, it's basically just been, it's been pretty much even, but Serbia's just kind of punched them in the mouth. Let's see. Drew, Holiday hits a shot from the corner. It appears to be a 3. They've cut it to 6. All right. So, we'll keep you up to date on it. I do think it's fascinating. What is the narrative around if they lose?
Yeah, it's, I think Jokic's legend just grows.
I think that's right.
Because you're playing well. You're giving me the numbers that tell you you're doing what you're supposed to do if you're the U.S.
I mean, that's the thing. The numbers aren't exactly showing that this is some horrible performance. It's the best. It does just show to me. It's like, I think we spend way too much effort trying to diminish Jokic.
Yeah.
And it's like, he's just a great player.
Mm-hmm.
So they've cut it to 6, and I think Jokic just got called for an offensive foul. Let's see. Can we foul him out? Maybe that. Do we refer? He's got 3. I think you get 5 in international, correct?
Yes.
So he's already got 3 with 2.5. That might be the only saving grace.
Still fascinating what Eric Hasselton told us about, you know, Steven Adams trying to guard him.
The other thing that's hilarious to think about is Steven was, like, the way, like, I always wondered this. Was he truly a bad free throw shooter, or was his hand just too big to shoot the basketball?
I guess that can be.
Like, think about it, like when you play with like the mini kids ball, it's really hard.
You have no feel.
Correct.
Yeah.
And like it feels like it always just rides in your palm, and it's like you can't ever like shoot it with your fingertips.
Is that where Wilt Chamberlain went underhanded?
I mean, wasn't that always Rick Barry's point?
Yeah.
If they would just shoot, that was great to see the grandson. The only good part about 3-on-3 is the grandson does shoot.
Underhand.
It is one of those ones, like, should someone just suck up their pride? Like, at a certain point, isn't it about scoring?
Yeah. Yeah.
But no one will do it.
Mm-mm. No. It'll take someone who doesn't care.
And I kind of thought Steven Adams would fall into that category.
Yeah, like, He would. He'd definitely be the
If there were the type. There's, like, I would try. I've never understood this. When you occasionally used to see the guys go to one hand,
mm-hmm.
I would try the granny shot way before I'd try one hand.
Didn't Shaq try every bit of that?
I don't ever remember him trying to do under the greats. But
he did the one hand.
He definitely did one hand. But, like, I feel like I would much rather try the underhand toss before I'd try one hand.
What we've seen of Zach Edey, it looks like he's just conventional and he has a pretty good feel for it.
Yeah. I mean, I always wonder, it's like, how much of that, like, I don't know. I am a big sucker for when we get to the NFL draft,
mm-hmm.
quarterback hand size.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because it's somebody that played quarterback poorly and had a very small hand. This idea when people are like, oh, it doesn't really matter. Oh, it matters. Especially if you're in any kind of weather. If you're in a dome, I don't care. But you're in any kind of weather, the ball just slips out of your hand. Like, anytime you try to really rip it, it just, like, whenever you see the quarterback that looks like he's pushing the ball back ready to deliver and the ball just falls out,
yeah.
I immediately just go, I know that guy's got a small hand. So, again, currently sitting at 67-61, a minute 45 remaining in the third quarter. But Team USA is trailing and has trailed for pretty much the entirety of this game. We'll keep you up to date on what happens throughout the rest of the program as Serbia hits another three, extends the lead back to 9 points. Let's go with Noah Lyles.
You just made the list!
All right, so we had, Phil, the 200-meter final. With all due respect to the young man from Botswana, mm-hmm. I did not have his name. He did have the ultimate move, though, of you're so far in front that you get to pound your chest before you hit the line. That's a big one, especially on those kind of sprints where the whole time I'm just going, I can't even fathom what it would be like to move that fast by yourself. Like, when you just watch the 200, I know we get obsessed with the 100, and I think it's because it's easier, more easily digestible. The 200 to me is just as impressive.
Not only to be fast, but you say to pound your chest to be that far ahead.
Correct. So Noah Lyles, who was gunning to be the first American to win the 100 and the 200 in the same Olympics since Michael Johnson, he ends up finishing third. We also get the report, Phil tells me. He tested positive, was it 2 days ago?
2 days before the 200-meter final.
So that would be 2 days mm-hmm. prior to today.
Yes.
I feel like that... I always wonder, it's like, because the 100 was Sunday, correct?
Yes.
So in between winning the 100 and the 200, he tests positive.
Mm-hmm.
I always feel like you got to leak that story later. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
When you do it right after the race, especially when you have been talking all of that S,
mm-hmm.
it really comes off across a sore loser.
Yeah. It's the sprained ankle.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know my back was hurt, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, I had the vid. And it's like, I also believe you need to let someone else tell the story for you.
Yeah.
Like, coach, you know,
mentor,
what I mean? Like, it's like,
the mom. Or...
Yeah, you got to have someone talking about what a mm-hmm. hero you are. It can't basically be like coming from your camp and you making it. It comes across as I got beat.
Mm-hmm.
Because he tried to go for the gas and he closed the gap. But it was just the Botswana guy was too far in front.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know if I love that move.
But it's in keeping with who he is. I mean.
Yeah, I guess you got to talk. You know what I mean? Like, you got to talk to yourself that I didn't lose. Mm-hmm. I got to chalk this one up. God didn't want me to win. That one. That one's always a tough one. I'm trying to think, did we have any big other events? So we had France beating Germany, as we mentioned with Eric. Decent size upset as Germany, coming into the medal round, most everyone thought Germany was going to be the stiffest competition for the U.S., but France is just playing, like, the home game environment's clearly a huge deal.
Yeah.
And, you know, clearly their bigs were a problem. So the winner of Serbia-U.S. will take on France in the gold medal game. And then the loser will play Germany in the bronze medal game, as now the lead for Serbia with 30 seconds remaining in the third quarter extends to 15.
Mm.
So I'm not feeling great right now.
Down to six, now 15.
Not great. Aaron Rodgers.
You just made the list!
So Ian O'Connor has a book, an unauthorized biography coming out on Aaron Rodgers. And Phil, help me out on this. according to a report I read, Rodgers did sit down and have an interview with Ian. So, to me, like, I always thought the unauthorized biography was that the actual subject never sat down on the record.
You know, that's how I understood it. I mean, if he sat down with him, did he not know it was for a biography?
You know, I would.
You'd have to know a little bit more about what went into that.
I'll say this. I think if Rodgers didn't know, we would know by now because Rodgers would already, you know.
Oh, discounted.
Rodgers. And, I mean, Ian O'Connor's also not, like, that kind of writer. Maybe do I misunderstand the definition of unauthorized? Because would authorized mean, like, he is a part of the writing process? But that, to me, like, that's an autobiography.
Yeah. It may just be that he said, I'm not gonna approve this, but you can go ahead and write it.
So we are now getting, so whenever you have the old nonfiction book that's coming out, I always feel like the marketing strategy is you start to see excerpts leaked, and particularly the salacious excerpts. And so the most salacious one so far that we've seen released is the relationship between Olivia Munn and Aaron Rodgers, and of course the fracturing of the family, and Aaron's disavowing the rest of his family. So, according to the excerpt that we've read, the single driving force that led to the split was that Olivia Munn was very vocal about their sex life, and Aaron's parents are incredibly religious, and they made it known that, at least publicly, they would not like some of the comments that were coming out. And it's one of those ones where, knowing the little that I know about Olivia Munn, I don't really find, like, I imagine the truth probably, it's probably not all that. I bet that's closer to the truth than not.
Yeah.
And then the other detail that we did get, which I guess I should have known because my buddy reported it. So Rodgers' dad showed up at the Lake Tahoe golf tournament last summer. Not this summer, but last summer. So the summer of 23. And apparently Rodgers at first was just going to blow past him because he's, like, in the gallery. And then, according to Rodgers, he decided to stop, talk, and they started to mend. So that...
How big a story that would have been had he not at least acknowledged it. I mean, you got too many cameras.
The only thing that I think that could have helped, though, is I think NBC at that golf tournament plays, I think they play nice. I think they might as well, I think they're basically doing PR.
Yeah, but somebody would have seen.
That's a fair point. Everyone's got a camera now.
Yeah.
Now, the one thing, though, that I wonder, because apparently the family did start going to games again, which I'm always in favor, because I've always just thought it's so... That's always, like, one of the sadder realities, like when the family won't talk to each other. That one always depresses me. But his dad did make it to a few games, but he's one of the... I feel like he's one of the most difficult players to peg in the sense of what's his place in history. Because I can make an argument that I have not seen... maybe anyone that really throws the football like he does. In terms of when he would do that move off the play fake and he'd take that huge drop and then have the crow hop, it was one of the scariest. If your team's playing him, it's one of the scariest feelings because you just assume you're about to see, like, a 75-yard bomb land right in the receiver's hands and you know that, like, that is just going to be a devastating touchdown. The throw in the Cowboys playoff game on the sideline where somehow, like, he threw it, like, honestly, like a magic bullet. Like, I still have no idea how it curved. To me, he's the best pure thrower of the football we've ever seen. Yet, you're just kind of left. Like, he has a Super Bowl. But, like, all the number one seeds, the MVPs, like, you almost just feel like, did that guy really... did he really maximize what he actually had?
You're kind of going back to your argument earlier in the show about teams that you know, kind of that mediocre. Maybe they're good for
consistent
yeah. level, but not always great.
And it's like, although I guess you could kind of, it's this weird reality of, I think the same thing held true for Peyton. And even though I pretty much believe that Peyton won a second Super Bowl because he was the Broncos were on the field. I mean, I guess he could, he made a couple of big seam passes and he didn't lose the game, whereas Cam made a couple of big mistakes and did lose. But they're kind of, it's like if you don't get that second Super Bowl in which Peyton picked the right team, I guess would be the argument. It's kind of the same thing. All the personal accolades, MVPs, but you're still left wanting more. The problem, though, that I have is at least Peyton has an excuse. Tom Brady was in the AFC. Like, who's throughout Rodgers' tenure in the NFC, who was the next best quarterback? Because I think the next best quarterback in terms of Super Bowls is Eli. But, I mean, and I mean, Peyton also, like, forget, you know, you also had Roethlisberger at that time that wins multiple Super Bowls.
Yeah, like, it had to be.
But, like, I don't even know who would you make the argument that was the next best quarterback in the NFC over that consistent period of time. Mm-hmm. And so I've never really figured out, like, what's going to be his place. Now, if the Jets win a Super Bowl, which I would very much bet against, but that's why we watch sports, is to see it. I feel like that kind of changes it a little bit. And then I think it makes sense because it's like, okay, him and Peyton Manning did it differently, but they're very much the same. Like, you can make the argument best of, if not the best of their generation, in the special category of their generation. But it's almost like if you kind of need that second title, I feel like, to be considered one of literally the all-time greats.
Is that the storyline you're following the most in this NFL season?
I think what I'm probably following the most is the Bengals, because I still believe, if we're going to have the, as much as I love Josh Allen, I feel like the actual foil to Mahomes is probably Burrow. But they're going to be this fascinating team in which T. Higgins is going to be playing on a contract. You've got the owner already talking about, you know, stop getting mad at me. I'm offering big money. And, you know, like they get the advantage of a fourth place schedule, but they're still in probably the toughest division in football. Like, to me, watching them and seeing if they're a real contender, it's someone that can actually be a foil to the Chiefs is the biggest story.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, let's talk with Jason Smith. We'll get his thoughts on Team USA and more when we come back right here on Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. Jason, was that sheesh after whoever the Serbia guy was hit like that 15-footer fadeaway?
Yeah, Bogdanovic to put him back, I believe it was Bogdanovic, to put him back up seven. It felt like a huge swing for the U.S. cutting it from 11 to 5, and there's Durant again cutting it back down to 5. But on a three-pointer from Durant, they got the foul, got the ball back. And so it was really a six-point play because Devin Booker ends up hitting a three after Durant and cut it from 11 to 5 in a matter of seconds. And because up until that point, Jeffrey, like it felt like the U.S. was about to go down. And they may very well be, but, you know, down 5 with 6:21 left, it certainly feels like a different ball game than it did just a minute ago when they were down double digits before essentially a six-point play.
Obviously, the final score matters. But in your mind, like, what's the story here?
Well, the story is Serbia's shooting. And I should have, you know, John warned me about this, about how, you know, they had been extremely poor from three in the last game out against the pool play game against the USA, and his point was, look, that's going to come back around, or there's a good shot it does. And I guess, you know, having watched quite a bit of the exhibition, and then you know, looking at the stats like I did from the pool play game, I just didn't believe him. I you know, we went down the list of Serbian players. He's going to, this guy's a shooter, this guy's a shooter, and that's turned out to be pretty much the story. I mean, Jokic is playing, doing what you'd expect, but what you didn't was 15 of 33. What is that, 45, almost 46% from three, and that's been the story. You're, you know, here's Jokic in the middle. Still down 5, don't have possession, though, but you've got a ball game here because of the way Serbia shot the ball from three. It's everybody else.
Even our old friend Marko Guduric is I think he's 2 of 3 from three, and then, oh, God, that is a terrible possession. You know,
Jokic is the only one who isn't. He's 0 of 6 from three, but everybody else that had been so broken the game before feels like they're hitting shots, and here they are now back up 7 with 5:03 left. I mean, there's no it would be a national disgrace. I mean, I don't think that's hyperbole. I don't think it's an exaggeration based on the way we sort of thought this team had turned the corner after getting Durant back from injury. The results we've seen of late, you figured, okay, the mission's on now. They've made it to the knockout stage. And oh, by the way, you're not going to have to play Germany. And you just wonder if starting this thing out, you know, U.S. having watched France win, you know, probably thinking, okay, we've got a lighter opponent here in the final. If they look past Serbia, and especially having handled Serbia twice, looked past them a little bit because their three-point defense has not been good enough, and that's why we've got a we've got a now 4-point ball game with 4:53 left. U.S. has been trying to dig its way out of this hole. It's weird, Jeffrey. I just went and picked up some new glasses right before I got back home, right after I got the show, and they're these progressive lenses, whatever. So they're trifocals.
Yeah, I was just telling you. Did you get your trifocals?
When you get this older, you'll get here perhaps one day. I don't know. You seem like you've got pretty good.
No, I used to have Hawkeyes, and now like, you know what I mean. Like part of like why I was a good caddy when I used to caddy. Yeah. If you're caddying for rich people and you find their golf balls in places that they're not expecting, like it's so funny when you save a millionaire like $5 on a golf ball, how much that matters to them.
Yeah.
But like part of that was just because I had amazing eyes. Now, like the last 2 or 3 years have been horrific. Like I feel like I feel like it's deteriorated like double, and it's just so depressing because I assume what means for me is I'm the step behind you. I'm assuming bifocals will be in my future, and then I will inevitably have to make my way to the trifocals as you have.
And as a result of this transition I've got now from bi to tri, they tell you, you know, it's going to take about a week to get adjusted to the different sort of, you know, the different basically levels of your lenses, the three different levels to see. And so my point is that I've got these things on here for the first 10, you know, 15 minutes, and I'm dizzy, you know, not sure I'm believing what I'm seeing. I'm dizzy watching this, but here we go. Embiid has now cut it to a 2-point game with 3:57 left, and hopefully the U.S. is going to be able to save us here from what would certainly be a national embarrassment. Yeah, LeBron rebound, got a chance to tie or take the lead here.
Jason, go out and shoot. Jason, go out and shoot 10 free throws. Let me know what you do.
I can't. My depth perception right now, Phil, I've got none, brother. And my, oh my, what a pleasure it is to speak to the pros pro, my former CA colleague that is Phil Stukenborg here publicly. Phil taught me everything I knew back during my CA days, and then I went as soon as I left, I forgot everything that he taught me, and I've gone back to being a fake journalist. But
I'm
always a pleasure when I get to talk to you, buddy.
I'm still teaching a class. If you need to,
yeah, I need a refresher. I need a refresher. Especially working with John every day, he's getting further and further from, you know, my journalistic background.
Let's say the pay is what you get paid now. Do y'all miss beat writing,
Jason?
It's a great question for me.
The money has to be the same, because obviously a huge part of being a beat writer is like not only it's
right.
Part of what makes it suck is it's a lot of work.
Beat down.
It's a lot of work, and pay's not great.
It's a lot of work now. Jason can probably agree. It's a lot of work now because you're 24/7.
Yes.
Whereas you could have gone, I think early in your career, you'd be on the road, you do what you have to do, and then you'd at least have a night to go out and eat.
And there's so many more people covering it now.
Everybody.
That's the other part. You've got more competition now. To Phil's point, it was changing during my 6 years on the beat where it had to be, listen, get that online story up now, we'll worry about print later on. And so we were making that switch, and what that meant was, you know, something pops off, you know, late, you're on. It's much like, and I've told people, it's not unlike being a doctor or a cop, I guess, in the sense, a homicide cop, in the sense that you're always on call. If some tiger gets arrested, okay, that's your story. I don't care if you're at dinner with your wife. We've got to get that from you. Get it into me as quickly as you can. And so part of that constantly having to be plugged in, and that set aside, and Jeffrey, you know this very well, Phil knows it very well, the plugging in you have to do just with your sources.
Yes.
To own your beat, to be on top of your beat in terms of the information that comes out of it and not wanting it to come out from somewhere else. There is a plugging in that takes something out of you. There's no question about it. And listen, everybody, you know, when I got that job, it was a dream job. And everybody would call, oh, man, you got the job of life. You're covering sports and you're covering the Tigers, you know, a team that you spent a great deal of your life rooting for growing up. What a dream job. And it is. It is in that sense, and especially in terms of, my gosh, I wouldn't be at the radio station if I hadn't had it. Dan Walken, Gary Parrish, we can go down mm-hmm. the list of great Tigers beat writer Corsi that have used it as sort of a springboard.
Lynn all Zinser.
Said, yeah. Lynn Zinser, a great one. All of that said, it wears you down to the point that you're talking, Jeffrey, when you're plugged in for that long. And so, it, not to mention, you know, forget nights and forget weekends, because that's when sports occurs. And so for a guy who at the time had a 2-year-old child and, you know, out on the road, you know, wife feeling like she's raising the kid on her own, you know, it was a blessing, to be honest with you, Jeffrey, to have the radio station come at me, not just because, yes, it was an increase from, you know, in terms of money, but more so because of the freedom, the schedule, the peace of mind, the getting out of the rat race. And so emphatically, I would tell you that while I do miss the being in the know, kind of the guy you look to for the info, man, I don't miss how hard that was to do. And so I consider myself blessed to be at the radio station, not be writing anymore.
You bring up an interesting, because I had not really thought about this, and I know for you it's different in basketball because there's more game days, but
right.
Primarily covering football, Sunday is more or less college football. Sunday's your off day.
Yeah.
But you brought up an underrated one, especially if they had lost. Sunday was the smoke the phone lines day because everybody's they get so loose-lipped after a loss, and that was when you could really start to get some stuff.
No question. And you can ask Phil. I mean, I don't know how many, and Phil had it tougher than a lot of us, because the one thing that comes to beat writing is you want to be covering a team. Ideally, you'd like to be covering a team that's relevant. And there were many years there where Phil had a team that wasn't. And so trying to find new storylines, new angles about, you know, something that, again, isn't necessarily winning at a high clip or certainly isn't drawing a national team, that's a tougher gig. But back to your point, I don't know how many, I mean, you could ask him, I don't know how many Sundays even Phil had off, because if it was a bad loss, you better have that follow-up of why it happened, or if it was a big win, oh, now we're getting more interest. And you have to be thinking that next day story. And so it's a constant sort of looking ahead, looking forward. What have I not written about? What's important? What's the most important? You know, that it's a constant reassessing just daily. And so even for, you know, yeah, it's fewer dates for Phil, but I probably tell you it's probably was tougher for him to keep it interesting. And he did for so many years. I thank God that guys like D'Angelo came around, that eventually we listened to Tommy West and we invested more, that, you know, Phil got some of that there eventually. It wasn't, Phil could tell you better than I can. They weren't all bad teams, but it was a lot different than covering those Tiger basketball teams under Cal that Gary and Walken did, and even Pastner. Those, I mean, we're talking four tournament appearances in 6 years. In seven seasons, you know, that was relevant enough. So, you know, there's different levels to it and different challenges to it. And I can't tell you how much I admire the job that Phil did on. So he was the pros pro, the guy we all wanted to be like. And it's not just because I'm on with him that I'm, you know, talking. This was it. He's the one that you tried to emulate. He was beat writer, you know, extraordinaire, the quintessential.
Phil, is the worst team the Larry's second year?
Yes.
Ooh.
Is that the worst year of beat writing?
Yeah, because you start writing stories about who's going to replace him after 2 years.
Exactly, and that's tough. And it was like,
wasn't the whole conversation of who the hell even wants this job?
Yeah.
Well, it had gotten to that point. Then you start hearing the drop football stories, you know?
Yeah.
And you said, oh, gosh.
Exactly. We were there. Mm-hmm.
So they had to drop that. And he was difficult to work with, even no matter how, you know, how good you were in trying to talk to him, and he just didn't trust a lot of people.
Well, you can straighten something out for me, Phil, before before you get me out of here. It's something I've talked with John a lot. Of course, we clown, we laugh, and we talk about, you know, how bad Larry was as a head coach. We know how good a recruiter he is, and something I've continued to point to with John is that, you know, Fuente just didn't come in with a cupboard that was completely bare. Tell me if I'm wrong on this. There, you know, the one thing Larry was able to do was at least bring in some of what Fuente was then able to turn into a winner. It wasn't zero. That there were some things in terms of talent. And as far as names, Phil, you're going to know it better than me. But what I've been trying to explain to John is that the one thing you could say, you know, Larry Porter did do was leave some talent there that Fuente obviously went on with and capitalized with in terms of, and then added, you know, his own sort of, you know, spices to the mix. But Larry left Fuente a little bit, didn't he?
He did. You know, it's funny, but the thing you remember most are the ones that he had to run off. You know, from the Porter era. I just remember those practices where people would leave and he'd be yelling. This is when you could stay at a practice the whole time, Jason.
What?
But yeah, he would sit. He would sit there and he'd yell at some running back and go, "Look!" And he was good. He'd tell him, "If you run off this field, don't ever come back."
You know? Well, that's part of it. Yeah.
So
there's also that first transition year. That is always a special thing to watch when you got the guys that were recruited by the old guy and they've had promises made and new guy doesn't know about promises or care. That's when you can really watch a team rip apart at the seams.
I haven't gotten a chance to talk to you, but I'm excited, you know, just in terms of where this program is. You know, you look at it historically and everything else, the opportunity for them. And I'm hoping they cash in, man. I don't know that'll do any good when it comes to possibly, you know, a realignment. But the one thing you guys have touched on, and I've said, it's not going to hurt anything. And it didn't hurt Cincinnati, and it didn't hurt, you know, UCF to have their football brands where they did when those doors reopened. So I'm hopeful that, you know, winning the AAC this year could, you know, mean bigger things, whether it's college football playoff or just revitalizing your brand to a point that, hey, man, when the doors open again, you know, they just can't deny you. You know, hopefully football can be a part of that. It's an extra pressure that's unfair, but, you know, things, like I've said, things have been unfair for Memphis for a long time.
But you get the right person there in quarterback Seth Hennigan to handle the pressure.
Well, I think it's lined up perfectly where you do, right? And you've been able to fight off schools to keep him. And so I've argued that it's Ryan Silverfield so far is his biggest accomplishment. I know he's 3-1 in bowl games, and you know, look at the momentum you're able to help build by beating Iowa State last year. But to me, it's, you know, keeping Seth Hennigan, having him is what's put you in this position now that we all, okay, first time pick to win the AAC, shot at college football playoff. And I tell you, you know, for my part and with the way college athletics is and how good we've seen Seth been to be able to keep him through this, we know Fred's helped, NIL's obviously helped. But to me, so far, it's his biggest accomplishment. Hopefully he's going to top that this year with an AAC title and hopefully a CFP appearance.
Yeah.
It feels like the key is, and I mean, I just don't know because of the schedule, but it's like I feel like an important part of, it's not even necessarily for realignment, but it's like becoming nationally relevant again. Because
sure.
I think
that's the first thing, right,
yeah.
Jeffrey? You have to, because you were that. You were that when, you know, you had become that, the hottest thing outside the power structure, and you lost it. You have lost it over the last couple of years. And so first things first, win the American, hopefully in doing so, you're gonna be putting up points, you're gonna be on ESPN, you're gonna be, folks are gonna be talking about you. And obviously they already are because they already consider you one of the big contenders for that group of five spot. And so, but I'm with you, Jeffrey, like getting the buzz back about Memphis football, having that, you know, as long as you've got that, well, there's your, you know, whenever those doors open again, hopefully you're as strong and you've reminded people how strong a brand outside the power structure this is and the value, of your program in terms of to these power structure organizations. Again, we're asking a question to them, to the haves that they've never wanted to let us into, and they may not anytime soon. But I think what we know is you've certainly got a good enough product to be there and better than some programs that are currently, quote unquote, in the power structure.
All right, crisis is avoided. Team USA hangs on 95-91. We've got Serbians in tears. Man, I don't know how to feel about that. I guess it's tough, gritty win, but like, man, I don't feel great.
Mine is straight salute to Serbia. Like, but they were, Bogdanovic was ready to fight. I mean, you know, he was going back and forth. They literally, it felt like they laid everything out there for this. I mean, you're right. I mean, ultimately, you're disappointed, I suppose, that it was this close, but I can't do my first initial reaction to looking at these guys and the tears that you're talking about. Man, Serbia almost did that. They just put their heart and they should walk out of there with their chest way up, brother. I mean, they took USA's best shot, nearly took it, absorbed it, and won.
No, I mean, Phil kind of changed my opinion, because like when you really did go through the numbers, it wasn't like the U.S. laid an egg. Like they didn't get to 100 points, I think, for the first time, but they still got 95. It wasn't like they were playing poorly. Like, that's just what Serbia did. Like, Serbia played extremely well.
Especially for the guys like me that thought it was just Jokic and a bunch of guys that could hit threes. No, I mean, those guys stepped up, man. So, nothing but respect for this effort by them.
Jason, we really appreciate it, buddy. Thank you so much.
Y'all take care.
That is Jason Smith of the Jason and John Show, weekdays right here on 92.9 FM ESPN from 11 until 2. When we come back, we tell your story next right here on Jeffrey Wright & Company, 92.9 FM ESPN. Before we get to today's Tell Your Story, I guess we could also say it was Team USA. They told quite the story. You can't have a comeback and overcome the odds if you don't fall behind. They did fall behind, but they do prevail 95-91. I mean, truthfully, as much as he's been a kind of a scapegoat at times, Joel Embiid had a pretty big game.
Yeah.
And Embiid had a key three-point play late. Goes 8 of 11 from the floor. He finishes, I believe, with 20 points, although for some reason on the Team USA official team stats, they don't actually tell us what he finished with. So he was 8 of 11, including 2 of 3, so that would be 10.
18.
Yeah, I guess he finishes with 18 points, 4 rebounds. They do prevail despite Serbia's best effort. They will take on France on Saturday in the gold medal game. For today's Tell Your Story, though, saw this video going around on the internet. Kodak Black, a very, 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 very colorful man that has lots of great quotes. Well, he stopped by a youth football practice in Florida, and he told the young men, say no to drugs. They too good. Y'all going to like them and go crazy. I mean, you kind of got to appreciate the honesty. Like, it's not just say no to drugs. It's like, say no to drugs. You're going to like them. Like,
it's a different approach.
Well, if you abide by the principle of whatever you tell kids to do, they're going to do the opposite. This could be smart.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I've never heard this approach.
Yeah. Kill them with positive intensity. I want to thank Eric Hasseltine and Jason Smith for joining the program. If you missed anything, it'll be up on the podcast shortly after the program ends. For Sheila, for Dennis, for Phil, this is Jeffrey saying thanks for listening. Keep listening. The Gabe Kuhn Show's coming up next.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Get your head in the financial game with smart investing and budgeting tips straight from the nerds. NerdWallet's experts will set future you up for success with dependable, fact-based insights. No financial misinformation allowed. Learn how to save on your summer vacation, find your next credit card or loan for a big purchase, and invest in your next index fund. Make smarter decisions in 2024. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy day beds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.